On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Oh, boy.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Oh my. OMG. OMG. LOL, OMG, IBM, EMT, COD. You know what's funny? Kids don't even know what COD means.
What? Does that mean, like, what does that mean?
It means cash on delivery, you asshole. You don't even know these things. You and your little letters that mean different things. You don't even know what they really mean.
Really?
Yeah, really. Why am I making people sound like silly voices like that?
Hello, how are you?
That's the way you all sound to me, all of you. Even the women.
Hello. Do you think I'm sexy?
That's the way everybody sounds to me. I think it's an eardrum thing. I think when I was born, the doctor dropped me on my head, and 5-second rule, nobody picked me up. Whatever. Whatever. Hey, on today's show, Skip Starchild. That's hard to say. Skip Starchild joins us every once in a while. He reads horoscopes, and he's incredible at it. Joins us a little bit later in the program. And also we'll be speaking to some guests, and we'll be roasting some marshmallows over an open flame, which you're not supposed to do anything over an open flame, ever. I remember my parents used to ship me out to summer camp. As I've told many of you before, my parents did what they could to get rid of me for the summer because I was antisocial and apparently a large pain in the ass. So they said this would be good for our son to ship him away in the summer to summer camp where we don't have to see his sorry ass for 2 months. And it'll be wonderful for him. He'll be able to mix with other little bastards and leave us the hell alone so we can go traveling and have crazy, unbridled sex in the attic. I mean, just, I don't know what the hell they were doing when I wasn't there. Maybe they're renting out my room. I really don't know. But they would send me away. They would pack me up in a suitcase, put me in the suitcase, actually, and just ship me away for the summer. Just put a stamp on my forehead and kick me out of the house for 2 months. And I did, and I went to summer camp and stuff, and I remember one of the oddest experiences of my life, and I hate this. This is how I know I'm heterosexual. I hate being around other boys. I just don't trust them. I don't know what they're going to do, and I don't want them near me. Once a week at this sleepaway camp, the camp counselors used to take us into the woods, and it wasn't even a Catholic camp. And it used to take us into the woods, and there would be about maybe 12 boys. And the counselors would make this huge fire and talk about Indian folklore. For some reason, everything that had to do with anything in the woods had to do with Indians. I don't know why, apparently. But this raging campfire in the middle of the woods in a clearing, and we would all sit around the campfire And the counselors would tell stories that would try to scare us. And we had to look at other boys and think to ourselves, what if he didn't have his pants on? Would that be exciting to me? Some of the boys, you could see the expression on their faces like, that could be a wonderful, wonderful life for me. Other boys, such as myself, would say, get me the hell out of here now. There are people sitting next to me that are stinky and really sitting too close. And we would put these marshmallows at the end of sticks. I don't know who invented this cuisine. Putting food at the end of any dirty stick where a raccoon probably had a piss fest on it. But we didn't care. There were no latex gloves in the woods. We would take sugar puffs, which is what marshmallows are. They're just made of sugar, and they puff them up. And we would take this food that we were going to put in our mouth and put it at the end of a dirty piss stick with bird crap all over it and mud and probably little infestations of ticks. And I don't know what was on this branch. Owl shit, I don't know. And we would take food and stick it at the end of the stick. Oh, there's a noun and a verb example for you. We would stick it on a stick. I like that. English language is just so cool. You can do so many things with the words. And then we would take this marshmallow and this long extended piece of dirty stick, and we would hover it over these gigantic open flames until the marshmallow turned black carbon. And then we would take this raging ball puff of molten lava and stick it in our mouths and eat the damn thing. And we were supposed to go, it doesn't get much tastier than this, does it, Bob? There was always a guy sitting next to me named Robert or Bob. It never fails. If you're ever in a group of people, men especially, or boys, I can guarantee you, as sure as my name is Robert Muckaboyle, there will be a Robert or a Bob in the bunch. There's got to be. I used to think there would always be a Mike. Now not so much. But a Robert or a Bob, it's there. You just haven't sniffed it out yet. And if there's nobody named Robert or Bob in your group of at least 12, then somebody changed their name out of embarrassment, I guarantee you. There's a Robert or a Bob. It's the law of averages. It's in the Bible. Check it out. Page 97 in bold print. Thou shalt have a Robert or a Bob in every freaking group. It says that in the Bible. It's also italicized. So we'd sit around the campfire and we'd be eating these lava marshmallows, and everybody else was smiling, having a great time, and I was like looking down at the ground to see where the next spider was coming from. I hated camping. I still do to this day. I don't camp. I mean, I don't hate camping because I just don't camp. One of the greatest moments in my life. Oh, it was the greatest. What do you mean one of the greatest? Sure, having children, getting married. Sure, great, great, great moments, top moments, moments I'll never forget. But the best feeling inside was not the feeling of love. It was the feeling of not having to do what people told me to do anymore. Oh, what a wonderful feeling. Oh, what a relief it is. It happened around the age of 19 when I left my parents' home for good, not just for the summer, but when I had an apartment in New York City and I lived by myself. It was the moment of my life. And I actually sat in my apartment and sat in silence and said to myself, Ron, Bob, this is your first taste of freedom. And your second taste of marshmallows. This is your first taste of freedom. You don't have to do anything. You can quit your job, be penniless, but you can quit your job. No one's going to tell you when to eat, when to go to bed, when to take a shit, what clothes to wear. Actually, when you get married, that all goes back there. But, all right, this is before you're married, and you move out of the house for the first time. What a wonderful freeing feeling it was. And for the rest of my life, basically, I realized I'm my own destiny, and that was the most freeing moment. It was wonderful. Ron, what's your point? I have no point, basically. I think you can realize at this point that I have no point. I have no points. There's no points. I have no point.
Here's what the internet is good for. Porn. 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 Really weird porn. Porn. Funny cat videos. Porn. And the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting. You know, when you need a little break from all those funny cat videos. Those things can really do a number on your wrist.
Yes, they can. Did you hear the new comment that Donald Trump just made? Yeah. He said, we've got to get rid of the Amish. They're just a bunch of murderers and rapists. Yeah. He didn't say that. That was a joke. He probably did at one point. All those horse and carriage accidents. Hey, you, stop. Stop. You just ran over my bunny. Can you describe the Amish guy that hit your bunny with the horse and buggy? They all look alike. Wow, how racist that is. I want these Mormons out of here. I want them to go back to where Mormons can leave too. I'm talking about the Amish. I want the Amish to go back where they came from. Pennsylvania, I think. All I know about the Pennsylvania Dutch is their noodles, which are tasty. So I think they should stick around. I don't know. Well, obviously, I don't know. I obviously don't know. All right, watch out. Watch out now. This is an article from Zach Epstein, who's a BGR. He's with BGR. I never heard of him. He says, it's never been more clear. Pizza Hut is very upset that its patrons are still alive. That's a wonderful line. I love that. Pizza Hut is upset that its patrons are still alive. So it's doing everything in its power to clog their arteries as quickly as possible. I love it. The latest evidence of this painfully obvious truth comes in the form of a Hot Dog Bites pizza, which the establishment unveiled earlier this month. Yes, I'm not kidding. The Hot Dog Bites pizza. It is a pizza, and on the rim of the pizza all the way around are hot little hot dogs, man. What does it take to kill you? Pizza Hut is a bunch of murderers and rapists. This guy, Zach Epstein, says, whatever you do, don't eat it. If you want to see what the experience would be like, though, four brave souls took the plunge, so you don't have to. And they're all currently on life support. When you get the hot dog and the pizza at once, it's so, so bad, says one. The other says, there's so much grease. So much grease is watching John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John over and over and over again. That's too much grease. This is worse. The third person said, nothing on this tastes like anything. This is beautiful. These quotes pretty much sum it up. It's gross, so gross. One person from the audiovisual club does note that the mustard dipping sauce is decent, but that's pretty much the only compliment this abomination received. Kids, I got to tell you something. You do what you want. I'm not going to sit here and tell you not to eat Pizza Hut pizza. But I will tell you that it's really, life is precious, and some things that you eat could fuck it up royally. Hot dogs by themselves, I eat them, but I know I shouldn't be eating them. I don't know what's in them. There are meat byproducts. And by products, I mean byproducts. And that would be bison penis. And I don't know if you've ever had bison penis. Mm-mm, tasty. Yeah. But there are other parts in there. There's ass meat, penis meat. I mean, it's awful. It's just awful. Of a bison and other animals, cows and cow lips. It's like kissing a cow up close. So those are hot dogs. They're tasty. You're not supposed to really indulge in them. They're high in sodium. They're just awful for you. But they are a guilty pleasure that you have when you go to the fair or a baseball game. I don't know why you would ever go to a baseball game, but or a sporting event. You have a hot dog, you know, or you're standing on a New York street corner and there's a hot dog vendor. You have to have a hot dog. It's the law. And then there's pizza. Everybody loves pizza. But I would never put the two together. Do you know what I'm saying? Just because two things are attractive to the American appetite doesn't mean that you put them together. It's like the Olsen twins. Why would you put those two together? They were born together. I don't know where they're from, but they're murderers and rapists, those Olsen twins. That's what Donald Trump told me. Don't ever go to dinner with Donald Trump. You're sitting in a restaurant and you're about to order and Donald says, see those waiters over there? They're all murderers and rapists. But let's give them our order. Yeah, man, Pizza Hut's going crazy. And then there's the, and that Little Caesars, are they the ones that did the bacon pizza where there was a 7-foot long piece of bacon or something wrapped around the pizza? I can understand bacon pizza somewhat because even though that will also kill you, I don't know who's going to kill you first, Pizza Hut or Little Caesars. It's a war. I get bacon on a pizza as artery clogging as that is, because you do put bacon on a pizza. Bacon goes on everything. Hell, if I had bacon shoelaces, I'd probably eat my shoes. Not true. I don't like bacon that much. Just being a general asshole. Bacon is like, you know, why is there no bacon ice cream? I don't know. How come nobody came up with that? Why is there no bacon chewing gum? I don't know. How come nobody came up with that yet? I mean, there's a long way to go with this bacon thing. And bacon, you know, is salty, it's horrible, it's fatty, it's all that kind of stuff. But we go crazy with bacon. Did you ever watch one of these cooking shows on television? Of course you have. And the cooking expert, the chef, whatever, will say, and now we're going to add a quarter cup of cream. And the audience goes, ooh. And we're going to add a half a cup of celery. The audience goes, ooh. And 3 cloves of garlic. Oh, you're putting garlic in it. Oh, my God. And now we're going to top it off with about 1/3 of a cup of chopped bacon. Yay, bacon. And the crowd goes wild and they applaud like bacon has just performed the theme from Titanic in perfect pitch. I mean, bacon doesn't have to do anything. The simple mention of the word bacon, people break out in applause. I should change my name to Kevin Bacon. Wait a minute. If someone said, ladies and gentlemen, and now Kevin Bacon, people would just go, yeah, what am I supposed to do now? Like, what is he going to do? But if you just say his name as a food source, the crowd cheers and they stand up and they go crazy and they're dancing in the aisles. Oh, we're going to get bacon. Oh, my God. Someone said the word bacon. You know what that means. It's such a wonderful food source. People go crazy. Bacon. I can't believe he said bacon. And then we're going to take about 2 cups of wine and... Ooh, wine. It has alcohol in it. Ooh, he's going to put wine in it. They go nuts. I don't understand it. I don't get it. I don't get you people. That's why I make you in a funny voice.
You don't get us?
That's a funny voice I use for all of you. Because you all are very funny people. You're amusing. That's why I sit on a park bench and I watch all of you walk by. Because you're amusing to me. You're all rapists and murderers, all of you. It's true. If it wasn't true, I wouldn't say it. Or at least I wouldn't make it up. I wouldn't go to the trouble of making it up. Ladies and gentlemen, Kip Starchild, here's your horoscope for today.
Greetings, fellow planet travelers. Kip Starchild here with your New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape. Let's take a look and see what the stars have in store for you. Aquarius, the stars say you'll soon find happiness and prosperity, but then I think I hear them giggling to each other, so maybe take that with a grain of organic fair trade salt. Pisces, your beautifully focused pursuit of meaning will soon lead you to a box of toaster pastries. Don't read too much into it, just enjoy some delicious toaster pastries. Aries, unfriend everyone on social media and start again. Choose better this time. Taurus, stop relying on WebMD and get that thing checked out already. People are starting to talk. Gemini, you will soon face a fork in your career path. It'll be the fast food industry or amateur bondage porn, so choose wisely. Cancer, when Mercury goes retrograde and Pluto is ascendant in the house of Cassiopeia, make yourself a sandwich. It will be amazing. Leo, call your mom soon for interesting news. And by mom, I mean the real one. In prison? Virgo, you will soon win a very prestigious award. But beware, your acceptance speech will be interrupted by Kanye West. Do us all a favor and punch him right in the sack, okay? Douchebag. Libra, your lucky number is 26, and your lucky color is blue. Look for instances where they appear together, especially on Tuesdays. This could help cure you of your extreme gullibility. Scorpio, it's time to stop eating things on a dare. Capricorn, now that gay marriage has been legalized, perhaps it's time to take a really close look at exactly why you love musical theater so very much. Maybe? Think about it. This is Kip Starchild, and that is your New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape for the month. Until next time, peace.
Welcome back to the program. My name is Bob, B-O-B. If you're walking backwards, it's still Bob, B-O-B. If you're dyslexic, I'm still Bob. You can't go wrong with me. If you're in the ocean and you drown, you may be doing my name in the ocean up and down, like a boy does, like a boy, a boy. You could be a boy bobbing up and down in the ocean. Speaking of the ocean, oh my God, ocean stories. Sharks have attacked 11 people off the coast of North and South Carolina this year, says CNN. OMG, CNN. This is according to the International Shark Attack File, which we were able to obtain the information from the International Shark Attack File. It was filed under Shark Attack at the University of Florida, including a man was bitten on Wednesday on the outer banks of Ocracoke Island. Ocracoke. Seriously, that's the name of the island. It was last Wednesday. That's higher than the average of 6 attacks a year off the coast of those two states, North Carolina and South Carolina. So what's behind the increase in shark attacks? I think we all want to know that. I think when we're eating dinner at the family table, we can't eat another bite until we figure out, like, why so many shark attacks? I don't know how 6 is a lot, but whatever. A number of factors could be contributing to the apparent rash of attacks, such as warmer water and drought conditions, says George Burgess, who's the director of the Florida Program for Shark Research at the Florida Museum of Natural History. He says drought conditions reduce the amount of fresh water, making it to the sea, which creates an environment along the shore where higher salt levels attract more fish and sharks, Burgess said. Warmer waters have sharks in North Carolina ahead of schedule, which is a recipe for more attacks. That's a recipe. At Oak Island in North Carolina, two teenagers were bitten 90 minutes apart on June 14th. That's because when a shark bites you, it knows you can't go swimming again for 90 minutes because you're full. That's a joke. A lot of you are saying, oh, really, Ron? Is that true? Oh, God. Burgess said people are going to the beach in higher numbers now that school is out for the summer. No shit, really? This is a situation that we can't ignore, as we've had a number of attacks that are serious within a short period of time, he told CNN's Anderson Cooper on Wednesday night. There's something going on there, and there's no doubt about that. This is why people run institutes, to make incredible comments such as, something's going on there, there's no doubt about that. That's after years and years of research and study. And he says it's a perfect storm of environmental and biological variables, as well as human activity, Burgess said. Obviously earning his paycheck as director of whatever this is. But in a column Thursday for CNN.com, he warned against overstating the threat of shark attacks. Yeah. He said, well. Patrick Thornton of Charlotte, North Carolina, was one of North Carolina's 7 attack victims. He was swimming late last week in Avon, North Carolina, in the Outer Banks with his son and others when a shark came up upon them. The guy started shouting, shark, shark, everyone out of the water. Kind of like Marco Polo, only like more consequential. At the same time, I'm punching the shark, trying to get the shark away from me, he told CNN on Thursday. Thornton suffered wounds to the leg and back. The force at which I was punching the shark, it would have been hard for him to hang on. I was punching him as hard as I could. Thornton thanked all the first responders who took care of him before he was airlifted to a hospital for treatment. The next vacation, he says, I take is going to be in the mountains, not the beach. I'm only here by the grace of God. You're only here by the grace of God? Wait a minute. If there was the grace of God, wouldn't have put you in the water near a shark in the first place. So wait a minute, God puts you in a situation where you could be eaten alive, and then you thank him for not dying? Him or her, or whatever. Interesting little comment, I believe. That's my take. Now you hate me, right? Now you hate me, because I said that, right? The shark attacked a man in his late 60s Wednesday. We talked about that. He was with the Boston Herald. He's a former editor-in-chief. His name is Andrew Costello. Bud Abbott was nearby, but didn't have comment. The paper's website said he was in fair condition at Vidant Medical Center in Greenville, North Carolina, with wounds to his rib cage, lower leg, hip, and both hands. The man was swimming outside the first breaker, when he came upon a 6 to 7 foot gray shark, according to Sarah Johnson, who's a spokeswoman for Hyde County. The shark pulled the man underwater, biting his rib cage, hip, lower leg, and both hands, she said. The man was conscious and talking when he was flown to the hospital for treatment. There was a big trail of blood from the water to the sand, witness Stephen Lee told CNN. And then a day earlier from that, a 12-year-old boy was bitten in the leg while swimming in knee-deep water off the Isle of Palm, South Carolina. The injury required 8 stitches, according to CNN. The shark attack victim said, "I didn't see it coming." My assumption is if you saw it coming, you would have gotten the fuck out of there. So I assume you didn't see it coming. See, it's one thing to do something that is adventurous and a little risky, and then a shark bites you. You have to say to yourself, okay, maybe I deserve that because I was doing something risky and dangerous. It was risky business. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. However, if you're a little boy, an innocent little bastard, and you're standing in the ocean knee high, your knees are submerged a little bit. That's like, and then a shark attacks you. That's not fair. A shark should not be doing that. The kid was just like standing in the water. He wasn't like out like into your shark area. The shark came all the way up to the beach in order to bite a kid. Just standing in the water knee high. So, bad shark. Bad shark. We don't condone that type of biting, especially on children. We do not condone it on this program. I don't care if your name is Bob or Sid or whatever the case may be. We do not condone that kind of activity here on this show. I'm a little bit mad at sharks because they're nothing but murderers and rapists. Did you know that? Oh, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. I'm not kidding you. All right. You know what it's time to talk about? Do you know what it is? Have you gotten a car yet? Do you need a car? Are you concerned about cars? Are you concerned about cars? Huh? Kelsey Mays is going to join us now. I don't know. I mean, I like to drive cars that are built in America, and then I find out that like even foreign cars are assembled and built here, and people get jobs here with foreign cars. They're not really foreign. We shouldn't. I guess Donald Trump says we should let cars into the country, but not people. I don't understand Donald Trump. I don't understand Donald Trump. Anyway, Kelsey. Help me out here, Kelsey. Kelsey Mays is the Senior Consumer Affairs Editor for Cars.com. We all know that. How you doing there, Kelsey?
Good, Ron. Happy 4th.
Thank you. Same to you. Happy 5th. Let's share one.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cars.com is where most people go when they want to find out about cars purchasing or just taking a look around. And we turn
yeah,
to
they
you
can
here.
Go and-
yeah.
Sure. They can go online to cars.com and research their vehicles, find cars for sale, and figure out which car is right for them.
Excellent. I happen to be in the market for a car as we speak, so your interview with me is quite timely. And I also truly believe that I want an American car. I've had American cars like almost all my life, and I'd like to stick to that.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've been doing this American-made index since 2006, and what we found out is that the American-ness of a car doesn't necessarily kind of implement itself by the badge on the hood all the time. The top car this year actually is the Toyota Camry, not the car you'd think. And it's built in Kentucky and Indiana. It has a very high domestic parts content, and it sells in a large number.
Okay, I'm confused. So it's domestically... manufactured, but why is it Toyota? I don't understand how that works.
Well, I mean, if you look, the Camry employs thousands of Americans in Kentucky and Indiana, and the other cars on the list, like the Toyota Sienna, the Chevy Traverse, Honda Odyssey, the GMC Acadia, they employ thousands more.
Right.
And so when you look at cars in terms of just the percentage of domestic parts, and you look at cars that are built here and bought here in large number, cars like the Camry actually come out pretty strong.
Oh, okay. So cars that, like the Porsche and that kind of thing, I mean, cars that are so obviously foreign, those are the only ones that are shipped over here? Otherwise, they're assembled and manufactured here?
Actually, there's a lot of cars manufactured in the United States. There's 101 cars that are built in the U.S., but passenger vehicles that are built in the U.S. But interestingly, a lot of those cars, close to half of them, have less than 60% domestic parts content. Yeah, it's actually interesting. When you look at the percentage of domestic parts, there's a lot of cars, even though they're built here, that don't come in very strong on that number.
When you say built, are we talking about assembled?
Yeah, we're talking about assembled here.
Because if I buy a park bench from China and I I put it down on my lawn and I assemble it, then it was assembled in the USA.
That's true, and that's why we don't just look, cars.com for the American Made Index doesn't just look at the assembly point. That's one of the factors we look at, but we also look at that percentage of domestic parts content, because that reflects, you know, just how many parts are sourced domestically versus from other countries overseas.
Okay, because cars are all like almost equally expensive now. At a point we were buying China stuff and other, you know, other countries because they were actually cheaper. They were made less expensively in other locations, as are many products. But now those products are becoming quite expensive car-wise, I guess.
Yeah, the average car in the United States transacts for, you know, $32,000, $33,000, and that's a lot of money for the average consumer.
Yeah.
And so, So we're seeing kind of, as we're looking at a globalized auto industry, we're seeing different car companies really adopt similar platforms for cars that are sold either in, you know, everywhere from China to Europe to the United States.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that is driving domestic parts content to actually come lower.
Okay. So are you seeing a trend where the United States is getting more involved in car assembly manufacturing than in the past? Is this a growing good thing?
Yeah, it's actually, we're seeing two things happening, Ron. One is that as domestic parts content kind of falls on a lot of vehicles, and we're seeing fewer and fewer cars with really that highest kind of echelon of domestic parts content, we're still seeing more and more cars being built here. If you look, you know, now versus 2010, 2011, there's a significantly higher volume of production in the United States, even as that number of really, really high domestic content cars declines.
Can you give me some examples of all American cars?
Cars like the Camry, the Sienna, the Chevy Traverse, the Honda Odyssey, the GMC Acadia, and the Buick Enclave. Those are both General Motors SUVs built in Lansing, Michigan. And finally, the Chevy Corvette, a real American icon. It's built in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Those are all cars that have U.S. assembly locations, significant, in most cases, significant sales, and very high domestic parts content. So those were the seven cars that made the 2015 Cars.com American Made Index.
And what cars are actually not only assembled here, but actually manufactured from scratch? Are there any?
You're talking manufactured from scratch all the way down. You know, we don't know because that's not something we really get too far into in the American Made Index.
Okay.
But the higher the domestic parts content, the more the parts are sourced from the United States, from areas around here.
And that really matters to people, doesn't it? It does to me, and I don't know if I'm just weird or if this is like a major percentage.
Yeah, no, I think it does really matter to people. We've surveyed consumers this year, and actually 28% of consumers want to buy a car from an American manufacturer, and though that may not seem like much, that's up from 23% 5 years ago.
Yeah, because see, cars that are built here or whatever, because people in the United States are a little bit larger, both girth and height, than people in other countries tend to be kind of small, seriously. And I know I was always scared of Toyota because I thought I can never fit in a Toyota because that's for Oh, I don't want to be. Oh, I can't be racist. They're a smaller culture, and I thought, okay, sure, those cars are going to be too small for me. But I guess that's not the case.
Well, Toyota is actually an interesting case because it's really doubled down on a lot of these very, very large vehicles, primarily for North American shoppers.
Okay.
You look at cars like the Tundra, the Sequoia. A lot of these cars were developed here in the States, and their domestic parts content wasn't high enough to make the American-made index this year. They're definitely cars meant for larger people.
Okay, all right. A little bit off topic, then we'll get back onto it in a second. I'm very concerned about recalls. And when I go out and I buy a car, I'm specifically looking for cars that don't have a big, manufacturers that don't have a big recall history, because that's the biggest pain in the ass ever. Because it inconveniences me. I think they should pay me because I can't drive my car. I think I should be paid for that because they made a manufacturing mistake. Cars.com, can I look and see which cars like have the fewest recalls?
Well, we don't cover the cars that have the fewest recalls. Yeah. We certainly cover the cars that have the most recalls.
If you're really concerned
about recalls,
that's fine.
Yeah, you can avoid those cars. And we cover recall notices on cars.com in our news section. You can also look up how many recalls are on any specific make and model on cars.com as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's my number one concern, to be honest with you. It sounds like they don't have any quality control.
Yeah, I don't blame you. 2014 was a record year for recalls, and it's looking like 2015 will shape up to either be very close or to even break 2014's records right now.
That's just wonderful. So, I mean...
Yeah, interestingly... go on.
No, go on. You go.
But it's interesting that you're a consumer that obviously cares a lot about recalls and how often your car would be recalled. Mm. A lot of consumers don't seem to care that much about recalls because it's just kind of settled into the American psyche that, gosh, cars are just getting recalled all the time. And so recalls, interestingly, brands that are recalled a lot, doesn't seem to be affecting their sales very much.
Interesting, because if you've ever had your car recalled and you understand how disconcerting that is to your life.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, I swear by cars.com because when I go to make a purchase of that size and it's huge dollar-wise, I got to make sure that I am as educated as I can possibly be and get as many opinions as I can possibly get.
Oh, yeah. We have car reviews of most of the best-selling cars, all the best-selling cars on the market, and we have comparison tests, and we have quite a number of editorial pieces to really help you do your research and find out which car is right for you.
Excellent. Okay, so the most American cars, find out which ones, if that matters to you, which ones at the top of the list. If you're looking for a car like me, see, I'm struggling with the point right now, Kelsey, where I got 100,000 miles on my Mercury Sable, and I love that car, but because it was tall, it had a lot of headroom, but they don't make that anymore. They don't make it. So go on.
Well, if headroom's your big thing, a lot of SUVs, particularly because the Sable's a full size sedan, so if you're looking for something to even increase headroom from there, you're probably going to be looking at an SUV at this point.
Oh, I'm sure I am. And thank God they're making a lot of them because it was a point I thought, this is over for me. I'll never drive again because I got to be in a car. But now, there are SUVs. But my problem is 100,000 miles, do I cash it in and get more money now than if it's 110,000 miles, or do I ride it out because it's riding just beautifully? That's my big dilemma.
Well, Ron, cars last longer and longer than ever these days. The average car out there on the road is something like 10 or 11 years old at this point.
Oh, really?
So I think, actually, and 100,000 miles these days, 100,000 miles is like the new 50,000 miles. I mean, that's actually not very high mileage. And I don't think you're going to take a huge hit in resale value from the extra 10,000 miles. Okay. So, if I were you to save a few bucks, you might as well keep driving that thing.
Oh, my car god now is Kelsey Mays. How do I get more information?
Cars.com/news, and that's where you can find the 2015 American Made Index and all the other research you'll want to do.
Great. Kelsey, great conversation. I appreciate it.
Likewise, Ron. Have a good weekend.
Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Kelsey, all right, bye.
Thank you, Kels. Okay, babes. Time's up. I'm out of here for today. I'll be back again tomorrow. Hey, every weekday we're here with a brand new show, and it's internet radio. We're distributed by various outlet groups all throughout the country. So we thank them. And all you got to do is go to any one of these outlet groups or directly to newenglandbroadcasting.com. You can go to iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Podbean, all these places, and listen to the show. Great thing about internet radio, you don't have to listen in a particular time. Oh, damn it, I missed the show, I missed the beginning, or whatever. You relax at night, you put your little slippers on, you get a glass of wine, you sit back, you listen to the Ron Van Dam Show anytime you want during the day, or anytime you want. You can hear episodes from a year ago on many of these websites. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for your time and your patronage, and I wish you peace. I do. I wish you peace. Right after this show, I'm legally going to change my name to Bob.
Whatever.